Namaste. Welcome to this graduate program homework session. And I want to start by saying that our live session, so December's live session, where we start the new topic of study for the month of December, is this coming Sunday, which will be the Sunday the 6th. And that is going to be at 2 p.m. UK time. So that's the normal usual time that we do it when the course isn't running. It's when the Dissolving Ego course is running. The live class will have to be on a Saturday after the one that's direct material. So, okay. So we'll start with the first set of homework. Actually, before I really get going, I want to say that with the new month's study starting on Sunday next week, it's entirely up to you if you want to send in feedback for this week coming. If there is any, you know, come next Monday, I will go through it and read it out. It's entirely up to you. Some people seem to want to wait for the next lesson, the next thing starting on next week. It's entirely, if there is any, I will read it. So first one says, I have been looking at the quote from the Avadhuta Gita. On reading this, I see it as a reflection of my motivation to come to satsang. I was in a place in my life where I was feeling deeply entrenched in anxiety and living my life from a place of fear of what I couldn't explain. So that was really very much my experience, that there was just this constant fear all the time. And I didn't even know what it was about. It was just this dread, this sense that something, any moment, something was going to go terribly wrong. And it just never left me the whole time until I really fundamentally, you know, woke up on a deep level. As I've come to see, there is no separate self to be overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid. The fears I felt I was entrenched in are dissolving. I also see that it was through some higher power that I came to be in satsang, and I was given this gift. This quote rang true from first hearing it, as I am being released from my fears. So it's very, very true, isn't it? Our egoic sense of self, our separate sense of self, can never really understand why it needs to break free of these fears, because to the ego, the fears are real, they are true, they are valid, and it believes in the world of cause and effect. It really literally is the world of cause and effect, and because of that, it really takes something higher, the non-dual self, the noumenon, the awareness, the grace of God, all same synonyms for the same thing, to actually want to come out of that. So it's wonderful to hear some feedback from you as well, this particular person in the graduate program. I hope to see more of that as we go through the months. Wonderful. Definitely moving forward. Okay. So next one. Hi, Helen. Here is the homework for this week. It has felt a little bit different this week. It feels like I've not been contemplating quite as much this week. General life has been a bit busier too, but I still feel as if I've been more peaceful as the weeks go on. I still carried on with the contemplation set in the homework when I could. Good. I think I realized more deeply this week that whatever life is showing me in the reflection are the answers to my contemplations on am I looking at or from the self, and what does it mean that there is no separate self? So when we ask a contemplative question, we tend to, as human beings, wait for an answer, you know, wait for some thoughts or some aha moment or some emotion or something to come. But the moment I ask, what am I? Immediately the question is answered before I even ask the question. All of this is the answer. So if I ask, am I looking at or from the noumenon? Immediately, whatever is present in that moment when you ask the question is one type of answer, isn't it? It's not, it's an instantaneous that I'm looking, all of this is the answer if I am the noumenon. If I'm looking at the noumenon from the ego, I'm going to be waiting for some answer to come, some aha moment or something. That's not to say that won't happen, but it's going to be different, isn't it, when it's when you see, right, all the time, life is a three-dimensional constant answer, constantly changing, coming back to me. Whatever the question is changes, but the answer is always consistently all that is. Lovely. A study buddy pointed out to me that some of my responses to certain situations were coming from a sense of unworthiness and not being good enough. So the whole process of my study buddy telling me this and my reaction to realizing there was still unworthiness there were part of the answers to my contemplation. Could I check with you that this is right? That life is reflecting answers to you all the time. Yeah, exactly what I've just said before I realized you've written that. So if I ask, is it true I'm looking at or from the noumenon? Where am I looking from? And I'm feeling a sense of unworthiness arise in that moment, or someone points it out to me. What relationship I'm in with the unworthiness at that point will answer that question. Am I looking at or from the noumenon? If I identify with the unworthiness and I keep feeling, agreeing, then I'm looking at the noumenon from the imaginary self that feels unworthy. If I'm just allowing this unworthiness to arise and I'm questioning gently to dissolve it, then I'm looking from the noumenon at the egoic sense of self and its unworthiness and allowing it to dissolve. Very good, very good. I know this wasn't part of the homework, but it felt the right thing to do. That's good. And that's exactly the right guidance you're looking for. I spent some time contemplating, is it true I'm not worthy? I know this wasn't part of the homework, but it felt the right thing to do. I contemplated this as I was walking our dog, and I could feel the unworthiness. I could feel the unworthiness in my parents, my children, and one particular grandparent. That's quite significant, isn't it, that you've noticed that? It's quite significant that you've recognized that it comes with the body, doesn't it, this unworthiness. It was quite emotional as it made me realize that this unworthiness had just been passed down through the family and I wasn't to blame. Yeah. If I feel unworthy inherently with this body, then I'm going to blame myself even for the unworthiness, aren't I? And for my inability to transcend it so far or whatever is going on. So it wasn't my fault. Was it okay to add, is it true I'm not worthy, to my contemplations? Absolutely. You don't even have to ask me what question is right for you, because you know in that moment what question is right for you. I mean, yeah, it's good to check, isn't it? And that's one of the roles the teacher has. But you've already said it felt right, it felt correct. So that is something you should stick with, go with every time. I also really looked at the desire for non-duality arises in wise men to save them from great fear. Why would this desire suddenly arise? What makes someone a wise man or a wise woman? Save them from great fear seems fairly obvious, as to wake up fully would mean no longer being afraid. I read the statement every day to try to absorb a deeper seeing, and I will keep going with this. It has really started developing into a deep curiosity and what more this statement can mean. Again, lots of love to you. So keep contemplating, keep curious with it. And the one word that I stressed really, really, really when I was reading this in the live session, not many people have commented on it at all, and the subtlety of it. The word that I stressed in it was only, or alone, for the grace of God alone. So that's a further place you can take your curiosity to. Why by the grace of God alone? or only the grace of God makes the desire for non-duality arise. It's something we can ponder, all of us, during this final week. So, why would this desire suddenly arise? It's an interesting question, isn't it? What suddenly makes someone wise when they weren't the moment before? What is the definition here of wise, as we're using in this quote from this text? Could wise mean then that I might even begin to realize a different way to live? Wisdom may arise, becoming wise, when I realize that there might be some better way to live than I'm currently experiencing life. There might be some other way to see myself, the world, everything that fits better. Even the beginning of the realization, there must be something else. This cannot be all of it, is wisdom, isn't it? Stay with that question. If it brings curiosity to you, stay with the quote, definitely. So, next one. Hi, quieter week overall, so the chance of not applying and doing the homework would have been easy. Stuff that I'm not doing that again. It's good because I remember, you know, previous weeks you said that you've really been maintaining a momentum with the homework, even when there doesn't seem to be any suffering. When the homework usually gets dropped, the inquiry usually gets dropped. And as you so said here, stuff that I'm not doing that again. I recognize it's not been as often, but the checking in and looking at the is it from or at self has been asked. I feel the doubt has been erased and the recognition that it is one feels complete. I know there is more and it will ever deepen, but the doubt is gone. Very good. Having a question pop up on my phone on an evening is a blessing. So you set this reminder so that you, you're not going to go any ever more than one day without really looking at this question. That's a really good thing. Just a little bit each day, 5 minutes of this contemplation each day, is really all that's needed, as long as it's consistent. And that's what you're really getting now, that it's so much easier to just be consistent with it, to not allow myself to get back into a really contracted state and have to really dig myself out again of it and, you know, put out all the fires that have come with that. Using the statement process too, I look at the results sometimes immediate and sometimes they just sneak in, loving it and pushing through the resistance of I will write it later. I'm excited for the next set of homework. Then that's a breakthrough in itself for you, isn't it? That really your attitude has turned around 180 completely with it. Wonderful. Further to the above, I found myself rushing with too much to do, very much believing in time and space. I considered cancelling visiting someone I love who brings so much joy. As I was driving, I listened to the homework and was blown away. I can't remember the question, but the answer was about time and place from one body, and it blew me away. I recognize that thoughts and emotions are just thoughts and emotions. Let them be. Very good. I also heard you reading people's ideas on the quote, and I heard you say, look at the word alone. And I could hear was all one. Alone, both the same word. Alone and all one. For the grace of God alone arises this wisdom, the urge for non-duality. So as the one, whenever I begin to recognize that the two-ness isn't working, even if I don't know that it's two-ness, duality, that's not really working for me anymore, then that desire for the one is arising, isn't it? And that brings wisdom. How can you be alone when we're all one? Nothing to be separate from. These are beliefs being shown to me. Grateful for the means to look and see, to be able to let the emotions up and out is a joy. Thanks to everyone, as the homework is amazing. I love listening to it. Wonderful. And I really want to encourage everyone that's joining the graduate program newly from the course that we've just finished, that wherever you start with the homework, you can see that people are just contemplating the question, the statement, the quote. There's a question and there's quotes to contemplate. And it doesn't matter where you start from. You just dive in and start and give me some feedback. And each week we'll tweak it and we'll go deeper and deeper into it. And listening to everyone's feedback, as we saw in the course and we're seeing in the graduate program again and again, is really allowing self through all these bodies in the graduate program to evolve even faster. Why rely only on your own one body mind's epiphanies and aha moments and breakthroughs? Why not get smart and work from everyone's? You can learn through 30 bodies at once and see, wow, the self is having the same challenge in every human body, pretty much. They were all experiencing the same challenges and growth in the awakening process. Lovely. Alone and all one, nothing to be separate from. In a way, you've always been alone, haven't you? It's always and only ever been you. Always. Me and you and this and that, all of that came after. But all that is original is you. And that is an aloneness that is not sad at all. It can only be from the grace of God that the desire for non-duality arises to save us from great fear. Because that's all there is. There isn't any egoic sense of self, really. Which is why I said before that the question, am I looking at or from the noumenon? Or the other side of that question is, am I looking at or from the ego? Can't really answer that in the end. They're both the same. Both the same one. Okay. Lovely. Next. In continuing DTE lesson 3, I remember a satsang you had suggested to a being that their name was a synonym for God, and it was difficult to accept. It is now becoming more clear that it is true. If there is only awareness, how could there be any real being separate than the one with their own names? Even God is a label with many attached connotations. So that's the fullest non-duality, where my non-duality, my oneness, has included the sense of duality. It's not inclusive of your humanity and all this diversity, your realization, if it hasn't included all of that, which is lesson 4 really in its fullness. And it's not really non-duality. Non-duality means non-dual, not two. It means one. And one is only one when there's nothing excluded from my definition of myself, not even the sense of separate being, which still continues even after dissolving the ego. There's still a sense of it. And that's there as long as there's thoughts and emotions and sense perception are happening in the body. There'll be a sense of being someone somewhere. It's not a wrong thing, is it? But it must come to mean in the fullness of the fullest non-dual seeing should be that my name is a synonym for God. That the word noumenon and the word, whatever my name is, this body's name, is exactly a synonym for God. And even the word table and planet and chair and laptop and thought and emotion and tree and supernova and speck of dust, empty space, all these words begin to mean the same thing inside. They're empty of their other meanings. And all they point you back to is the noumenon, the one real self. As I continue to contemplate where am I looking from, a question keeps coming up. You've said, who you are, who you really are, is observing the awakening and says, there are really no problems to solve here. It is beginning to be seen that there are not really any karmic dysregulated thought patterns as well. They are only more appearances of the self. Very good. So even my karmic patterns are just shapes the noumenon is taking in its shapelessness. So how does one balance the motivation to improve and make progress. For the mind here can procure the awakening and become hypercritical at any perceived lack of progress, applying its taskmaster ways to the spiritual path. Well, it's a blossoming, isn't it? I can see my perfection already. And I can see where that perfection can express itself in the reflection ever clearer. If there's some limiting thought being believed, some karmic pattern running, that's limiting my expression in manifestation. I'm not limited, but the expression in the manifestation, first and foremost in the mind and body through the thought form and the emotion, and then the outer world reflection, as we're seeing. Then, of course, I'm going to want a full, I want, if I'm a flower, I want to flower as much as is possible. And that flowering is ever increasing, isn't it, in the manifestation. It's a flower that infinitely blooms and never, ever can close up on itself. It's just constantly expanding forever and ever and ever and ever. So, of course, I'm going to want to see myself clearly. I'm going to want to see myself clearly in the reflection, and I'm allowing that moreness of life is greater expansion, isn't it? Life wants more of everything. It's always looking to grow wherever it can in nature. And as a human being, it wants to grow wherever it can. It's that basic desire of manifestation, more. It's just asking for more all the time and wanting greater self-expression. So I can see what I am. And I can also allow that ever-increasing unfolding of self-expression. Just like my life as a separate being was the expression of my idea of myself, so too then the whole universe becomes my self-expression, the blossoming of this ever more beautiful flower that is the self. And if you come at it from that place, then progress is inevitable, because just to see where I feel limited in some way and wanting to transcend that, and allowing the reflection to reflect that back as I transcend the idea that I'm limited in some way, it's naturally gonna, what that will look like in practice is my life improving in some way. And you can never get to the end of that. So, you know, mind can say that I'm not making progress in this area or something. I'm not transcending these. These karmic patterns are just shapes, as you say. And then you can begin to as you begin to allow this blossoming more, mind will be seeing all the progress it needs. It'll blow you away at the amount of progress that's happening and change in the manifestation. Lovely. The intensity to awaken now has slowed because it was stressful to some degree. It's hugely stressful. I'm doing my best to look at certain thoughts and behaviors as they arise while balancing it out with the knowing that life is already complete, perfect, and whole. And that's the identity shifting, isn't it? I don't have to have this big effort to have something happen when I am already that. I am already that, and nothing I see or realize or become or no aha moment is going to change that. And I can just sit back more and relax this and let this unfolding occur. It's only the ego that's pushing for something to happen because it thinks there's a changeover. As identity switches through lesson three into the noumenon, being the noumenon consciously, I'm just watching this unfold. I'm literally just watching, and I'm in the process of manifestation as well, enjoying watching the sense of limitation disappear and the resulting expansion. So, you know, I'll be quite invested in that. For me, this is where I'm invested in the manifestation in humanity as a whole, to wanting to move beyond any sense of limitation and anybody that wants to experience a lack of limitation. But there isn't any need for anything to happen in that, because it already is. The perfection of the already isness undoes your ability to chase anything or push, doesn't it? Kind of, there's less and less angst in the process. As I contemplate the phrase, through the grace of God alone, I remember you saying, paraphrasing, God is grace. And I remember hearing of a fierce grace that life is going to use itself through life, circumstances to cause itself to wake up no matter what, sometimes creating so much suffering until there is a realization there really was no one suffering. It's the same for me. It's very, very much. And the ego is seen to be simply the vehicle which moves the self to realize itself. I guess no real question here, just an update. Yes, the ego is the collection of all my limited ideas or my beliefs that I've collected when I think I'm a limited being. First, this sense of being a limited, separate being, and then all the ideas that arise out of that about myself and others and all of that. So ego never really was a real thing. It's just a collection of false ideas and the resulting emotions and experiences reflecting back at me through the sense of cause and effect, the sense of time and space. And that gets clear that that isn't really something that I need to destroy. It just dissolves on its own as I undo these cause and effect mechanisms and see clearer what I really am. Lovely. Two more to go, so we'll carry on. Contemplating on the text, through the grace of God alone, the desire for non-duality arises in wise men to save them from great fear. What does it mean? There is an opening, an immediate recognition of not the body, no identification of forms, rather a seeing of the essence in all. Desire for non-duality means just to end the illusion, Maya, and the grace of God is available to us all in every moment, becoming in every moment and breath conscious of my true nature. So if I, the desire for non-duality, the desire to see the one, is the desire to really see that all this is the same, that it's not actually separate or different. The deepest knowing of lesson four, that even duality is the one, even duality is non-duality, where it all just merges into this beautiful, indescribable place where nothing can really affect my seeing, nothing can really disturb my seeing, nothing can detract from my seeing, that no matter what shape I appear in for the rest of my existence, pleasant or unpleasant, then I don't experience any change inside myself. I don't feel any different because it is all and the end, Maya or illusion is the belief that just because all this looks different to me, it is different. You know, that to Maya is the appearance of diversity, which isn't really actual diversity. And that's the seeing that we need to really grasp deeply in lesson four. So to save them from great fear of suffering, being limited, of not being good enough, the limitation of the mind, thoughts, the fear of lacking, living the body. Thanks for the feedback of last Sunday, Helen. Although I had heard many times that I was not the body, it was the first time that the knowing experience became a truth to me that I was everywhere. Perhaps just a little or huge taste. This knowing has allowed me to be more open, more conscious, curious, willing to welcome it, the self, more and more into my life, to be it, to recognize it, that it is always available. Thank you. Wonderful. So you have a little taste like that. It's good just to welcome it back, isn't it? I'd like to live like that. I had that taste, now I'd just like to live like that. Gentle invitation to. I'd like that seeing to come back. Nothing can stop it from coming back, and nothing can stop it from staying, unless we believe in some limitation, or we're believing in some time and space that some more progress is needed or something like that. Wonderful. Very good. Okay, so last but not least, this week I could feel the need to contemplate, to contemplate what was showing up in my outer world. If there is no separate self, then what is here must be the self. Very good. The self, so what is here, meaning my thoughts, my limiting beliefs, my perceptions, all of that must already be my self. The self was showing me how my consciousness says I need. If I needed to feel special, it would show up as a feeling of being invisible, insignificant, or overlooked. If I needed to feel peaceful, it would show up as chaos, noise, and discord. If I needed to feel safe, it would show up as uncertainty and threaten failure or loss. Beautiful, this, you're seeing so clearly. If I needed others to behave differently, the behavior would be magnified. To check that there is no separate self and contemplate this means that there is no someone here. And if no one is here, that means that suffering becomes impossible. Beautiful. Because I'm only suffering from the reflection, aren't I? The reflection, which I'm taking to be outside of me, is the only reason I'm suffering. I feel more separate. So as I begin to see that there isn't any separate being here, there isn't a cause here or an effect here, then the cause, which I've put as external, or the other, sometimes it's the other way around, a cause out there affects me in here, separate being. Or I'm here, this the cause here, this separate being having an effect out there, like awakening. We can begin to see that that just begins to fall down, doesn't it? Suffering is not possible. If there really is only one seamless whole, how is there ever going to be any cause and effect to suffer from? Any karmic patterns? If there is no duality in that way, sense of duality, but no actual duality. Wonderful. This idea of what I am and what spiders out from that as my world begins to fade. If the someone does not exist, then none of it can be true. Intense contemplation and inquiry seems to be needed for the parts of the story that are most believed. Yes. So there were certain areas where I'd seen many times that I was not a separate being, my self-inquiry, my contemplation, but I kept imagining an effect of that separate being, where there was some lack being experienced or some limitation somewhere, as you said in the reflection here. If I needed to feel safe, then a separate being seemed to arise in that moment as I was noticing the effect it was making me feel unsafe. As you've seen, they are one. You're seeing lesson two very deeply here. They're one and the same. Therefore, the outer core, the outer thing cannot exist without the inner thing. And if there's no separate being, as I'm seeing, this must also nullify the effects and the beliefs and the karmic patterns of the separate being, which is really lesson two in a nutshell. Then suffering is annihilated. There aren't any karmic patterns to undo. I just keep imagining as a remnant of this separate being. And intense contemplation may be needed in this point for me. There was, this is an imaginary effect of an imaginary cause. And it was important for me to remember that for quite some time in some areas where it came up, because otherwise the tendency is to try to fix the effect, which seemingly creates a cause back here again, a separate being. You could say in other ways that the sense of being someone, this egoic sense of self rather, is a collection of causes and effects. That's what it's made up of. And as you begin to see like this, it really breaks through. As I do this, I see that all that comes up is a manifestation of the self. To let go of the need, which powers the story, at times feels like letting go of all I desire. But the fact is that the need and the story go hand in hand. One cannot exist without the other. There is so much power in this. Yes, I can't begin to tell you how excited I am by what you're writing here. I can't feel I need something and not experience suffering or some limitation in my manifestation somewhere, because they are one and the same, the reflection, aren't they? I can't stand in front of the mirror and not have a reflection occur. It's just not possible. And I can't say there's something wrong with me and not have it reflect back in the mirror as well. And this I need feeling, or I want, is the imperfection in a way, isn't it? That I don't really need anything. And as I see that clearly, I don't need security in a real place. I don't need approval. I don't need love. I don't need acceptance. I don't need respect. I don't even need abundance. I don't even need awakening. I am those things. And then the reflection shows it back to me. Very exciting, very exciting. There is so much power in this, and yet needing something to go can perpetuate exactly that. Quite tricky. So the contemplation becomes, do I actually need this thing to go? Very good. So I can look in the moment and experience it seems to be happening to me again, wanting it to go, and recognize it's not really there. It's a three-dimensional, real-time hologram I'm creating based on the idea that I need something. And if I entertain the reflection at all, I'm making it real, aren't I? I'm making it a real effect of a real cause, this separate being with its karmic patterns. If I look at the effects that seem to still be happening, I had to do this with the financial situation, some financial lack would happen, and I would take whatever steps I needed to physically, but I couldn't, at a certain point, I couldn't agree that something was wrong with me or my life or my finances. If there's nothing wrong with me, there could be nothing wrong with my finances, the reflection. If there's nothing wrong with me, there can be nothing wrong with my body, with my work, with my family relationships, with my friends, all of that. And as you see this, then the same experience plays again, but you don't give it the validity. You say, this is just a reflection. You don't need to do anything about it spiritually. And it's so vital to kind of do whatever it takes to stay aware of that, isn't it, in that moment? Yes, I would take steps to correct the physical situation, but I wouldn't agree that there's something wrong, that this is evidence that there's still more work to do for me. This is just a reflection of the idea that there was something wrong with me and I'm already inherently that perfect self. The reflection of my sense of limitation reflects there's a not enoughness somewhere, doesn't it? Not enough money in this case, and not enough breaking through. Do I actually need this thing to go? And another one that might be helpful here is, what does it mean when it happens, this thing? For me, when the money situation arose, at first it would mean that I'm not awake enough, I'm not breaking through enough. And eventually I had to let go of all the meanings. It's just a reflection that was happening. It didn't mean anything, didn't change my conviction in being that. Only when I stood firm in my conviction, I am that already. And I didn't allow this thing to suggest to me that there was something, some work needed doing. Did it stop? Very good. My question is, my understanding is that the manifestation either will be transformed or it will not cause one to suffer or cease being a problem once it is seen as it truly is. Is it possible for any manifestation to be transformed? Are all distorted appearances coming from misidentification or misunderstanding? For example, genetic diseases, predispositions or mental illnesses. Can awakening transform the outer in a tangible way, and is this absolute? Are there any exceptions to this? I've always been troubled by exceptions to the absolute, while I know perfection can look many ways. It will transform it to some degree, and there aren't any exceptions to that. What the exception, I think that what you're asking here is, let's say there's a genetic issue or condition, something like that, then the seeing of the absolute perfection will reflect as much as it can in the body-mind vehicle and effect a healing as much as it's capable of in the time and space, as much as it's limited by any beliefs. Even if we see that in another being, it will express that healing to the extent that it's capable through that form, to the extent that it's conscious of that. And there are exceptions, but not to the healing. There are exceptions as to whether the condition will go, because there might be some other karmic pattern underneath. Maybe the sense of limitation in one area has been transcended, but it's giving that being another experience to experience as it goes through life. So the healing from suffering is always absolute inside an inner experience. The outer transformation will transform to whatever degree it's allowed to. You could experience healing as a totality, a total thing, miraculous transformation with the same process. Another being may experience only a partial or temporary respite from the thing, and then it comes back again. There's a story in the Bible where Christ healed someone, and then he asked the person to go to the temple and study the scriptures, to not tell anyone about it at all. And for me, this is very revealing, that when the person that experienced the healing, they were so overwhelmed by the physical healing that they completely forgot what Christ said. They didn't go running to the temple, and they went and told all their friends immediately about this great being that healed them, and forgot Christ's teaching to go and study the scriptures in the temple. So a little while later, the illness returned, because the belief was still there in the consciousness of this being. So if healing effect was temporary, it was absolute when it happened, but the overriding belief reasserted itself and recreated, reflected in the same illness in the body mind. So I hope that kind of goes somewhere towards answering. Please do ask again if I haven't, because it's a really good question. If you don't feel I've touched right upon the, let me just read it again to check. Can awakening transform the outer in a tangible way? And is this absolute? It must be absolute, because the outer is the inner. The inner is the outer, isn't it? There can't be any time distinction between those. There can't be any difference between, if it's healed on the inner, it must transform the outer. It cannot be other than. But the caveat of that is the consciousness's disclaimer, so to speak, is to say the awakened state can heal that temporarily in another body. The presence of the awakened condition in one human being can heal that completely. Like when that woman touched Christ's cloak and he said, "Your faith has healed you," and she was healed permanently. Why? Because she became very interested in, she had absolute faith that there is a place where problems don't exist. And she stayed interested in that. That healing was permanent. So she was interested in the noumenon. The other person was interested momentarily, that, and the healing therefore happened absolutely, but they began to become more interested again in the place where there are problems, in the egoic sense of self. So nobody really knows what's inside some other being's consciousness completely, as to whether it completely heals in an outer way. But it is, there cannot be absolutely any lag time between that. This is something I really questioned in myself as well. I really wanted to understand this. Why do some beings heal and others don't? And why does healing seem to spontaneously occur in beings at a certain level of consciousness? You know, why does that suddenly, why does the muscle test, why does nothing test negative on the body after a certain level of consciousness? It's really because we're interested in that place where there isn't any differentiation or difference, like the noumenon, the actual noumenon. As to whether that healing is allowed to become a permanent thing is entirely up to each individual being, isn't it? In that, that's the free will of the universe, that we're all free to choose what we want to experience, even if we don't realize we're choosing. Wonderful. So I hope that's helped to answer that, and very exciting to see, you know, as you see the absoluteness of the inner and outer being the same one, two sides of one coin, then you're not going to believe in any limitation for others then. And that has an effect upon them. You give them their best chance to sometimes even to experience a temporary healing, and then have the beliefs reassert themselves, is enough for a being to say, hang on, where did this go suddenly, and it's come back again? You know, lovely. So I look forward to receiving any homework that comes in. I will read it through. I'm doing it on a Monday now, and it's easier time for me. So I will see you all in the class on Sunday. If you can make it, it will be recorded as always. If not, lovely. Thank you. Namaste.